President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. It's May the 1st on the West Coast, now May 2nd on the East Coast. That's Friday or Thursday, depending on what part of the country you are living. Tonight, we are going to pretty much jump right into our show. I don't really have any messages other than to thank all the wonderful people that have been emailing me about the pictures I posted on my website, directlightproductions.com, and people that just have a lot of nice things to say. It's nice to hear some positive comments from people. People are thinking. People are waking up. That's what this is all about. I would add to this that anyone that is really thinking about what they see in those photos, use some imagination. By all means, get out of the box. And once you're outside of the box, think outside of the box and stay outside of the box, at least while you're looking at the pictures. And don't try to answer the questions that you may have posed to yourself from inside the box. It doesn't work that way. Once you get out of the box, then the out-of-the-box rules apply. It's a pretty simple matter. I answered an email today that someone sent me about the World Trade Center pictures, and it's on my news page. I thought I was very kind to the person. The person actually wasn't rude, but made some comments which could be taken or misconstrued as somewhat inflammatory. When someone makes a claim about something that they know a lot about and have quite a bit of experience with, and then it's just touted as being ludicrous or insane or whatever word the person wants to use. Of course, that's their opinion, and they're entitled to it, but they don't necessarily have to share it with me, especially when they can't spell right or they can't use capital letters and punctuation like some people can. I mean, if you have a message, write it in plain English. You start a sentence with a capital letter, put a period on the end, so I sort of know where a thought begins and a thought ends. These are many of the messages I get, including a death threat that I got, which is kind of funny, because how you could relate pictures of a galaxy to 9/11, I don't know. How you could relate pictures of a galaxy to Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan or the oil cartel, I don't know, other than that I made a general comment that they seem to be pushing all the buttons. So if we're not finding out the truth, it's because certain wealthy people that are running the planet don't want us to know the truth, because it empowers us on an individual and then on a collective basis. It empowers us. And these folks don't want that to happen. And I use the word folks with reservation because many of us are of the opinion that they're not even people. So, that said, I appreciate cogent thoughts and a pensive type of statement that shows that there has been some internal reflection and there might be even some experience or some actual knowledge behind what you say. But when you're outside the box, you are outside the box. And so the rules of inside the box don't pertain. And that's my little suggestion. It's not even a rant. It's just friendly advice for someone that wants to communicate a message to me. I'll be happy to do that back. I'll be happy to respond if I'm treated with a modicum of respect. That's all. With that, we are returning to Evident Footprints tonight. Our special guest, who has been on the show a couple of times now during the past few weeks, and not only have I had requests, but he's got a very important message to share, and it's along the lines of what we have been talking about on many of the shows, and it has to do with higher consciousness and mankind's path in the future. Right now, it's the very near future, and so it's important to bring him back, and he has written a book, authored a book called The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and while he was working on that book, he got some communications from a group of, let's say, a soul group that is working on a very high plane for the benefit of mankind. And there were actually several people claiming to have some communication with this group. And our guest is documenting all of the information coming through. And we're going to talk about that tonight. And his name is Wynn Free. Welcome to Evident Footprints. Wynn, how are you?
Hi, Don. I'm fine, and thank you for having me on again.
And my pleasure.
Talking about being outside of the box. I am probably as outside of the box as you can get.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I don't say that as a bragger. I say it because I've had the challenge of trying to communicate, trying to find what's the highest value that my experience can have for other people. What am I really offering people? I mean, you've studied my experience now, and you know what? You still don't have my book. I've thought for the past 2 weeks, God has to send me his address so I can send him a book, have my publisher send him a book. So please don't forget to do that. I'm not ignoring that. I just didn't follow through, and I don't have your address.
Okay, so I'll send it to you.
So, okay. So, what is the most important aspect of what I'm sharing with other people? Why is it important? Because I have learned a little bit to think like these, well, what you could call higher consciousness or expanded matrix beings think. After, like, 6 years of conversation with them and studying their communications through David Wilcock, the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, it's like, who are they? Why do they care? How do they care? How can it benefit us? And what is my particular best way of sharing this with other people?
Mm-hmm.
So I give people the maximum chance to change their lives. And I've learned that you've got to hammer people over the head with a sledgehammer even to get them to pay attention and look at you, because most people look at things from inside the box. And so whatever you tell them, whatever they hear, they have a conversion filter, and their conversion filter causes them to hear it not like you're saying it, but through their own filter. And so my challenge is for all those people listening, you know, I'm going to assume that you guys have filters, even though your filters are far-out filters. I'm sure this audience has got far-out filters compared to most people. But nonetheless, they're still filters. And everyone wants to make something familiar. And even we make the unfamiliar familiar by thinking we know something about it, by giving it a name, by identifying it, by talking about it like, okay, we all know about this, so it's familiar. But there's an aspect of all this that can never be familiar, because as soon as it's familiar, it no longer has transformational power. Do you know what I mean by that, Don?
Yes, in fact, while you were saying that, what was coming to mind in a sort of synchronistic way was the experience I have when I'm studying a subject or I'm digging for some knowledge, let's say researching, and I'm looking in an area where I know what I'm looking for, but the path is not so clear. Often I step back and stop what I'm doing, and guess what? It appears.
Right.
And,
you know,
go ahead.
You know, it's like when you were talking, you're talking about like opening your minds, and I was saying, do I want people to open their minds? Well, you know, opening your mind is the very first step. The very first step in expansion is to knowing that you filter everything.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know that you filter everything, then the goal or the challenge is, so what is my filter? And how do I see things that are outside of my filter? How do I know that they're outside of my filter? And how do I get them around my filter so I can let it impact me so I can grow? Okay? That's what I see as a challenge. And, you know, in my case, I'm having this experience that is really out of the box. I mean, you know, there's one box that says, okay, now they're are UFOs, and most people don't believe that, so let's bring the reality of UFOs. Now, if somebody suddenly starts believing in UFOs, then they have to say, okay, there are intelligences in other planets, other solar systems, other galaxies, and perhaps there's even ways of moving people or beings from one galaxy to another through dimensions, not through the way we know things normally move, where things can move what would apparently be across great distances in a matter of seconds. And then you have to ask yourself, so if that's true, what does that mean to me? And if that's true, how do we know they're positive? How do we know what their agendas are? That's a whole another question. And how do you learn to trust the agenda, even if they say they have a certain agenda, to know that it's trustworthy and that they're our friends and they mean to help us? How do you know that we're not opening the door to something that is devious and doesn't mean to help us but has a lot of technology and power and ability to impress people? Most people would follow someone who did miracles to the ends of the earth. People talk to me, and they say, well, okay, so you're talking to these beings. Well, that's really interesting. But I want to know something for myself. I want to see it for myself, which is a reasonable thing to ask. I had an interesting conversation with a lady today. We were just talking, and she said that to me. And I said, you know what? Suppose I went outside of your restaurant, and I stood outside, and I said, watch me. And I levitated, and I came back to the ground, and I levitated again. And then I came back into your restaurant. I said, okay, you saw me levitate. Now are you going to do everything I tell you? I mean, is that what you, you know? She looked at me and said, no. And I said, good, because you shouldn't. Because a guy levitates doesn't mean that you can trust them. It just means that he levitated, you know?
Well, it's something when, in my estimation, it's something that you sense in the heart, ultimately.
Right.
Those things that... Yeah,
you have to sense it in your heart. And I think, even for myself, I have to watch something over time. I can't make for really big decisions. In other words, if a spaceship landed and said, get in, we are your saviors, did you? would I get in? Probably not. I mean, unless I had a raging fire, you know, chasing me, and I said, well, this was the better decision, you know. but I would say, who are you and where are we going? And there was an old Outer Limits show that became a classic that, let me see, it was called We Come to Serve You.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about did you ever see that show?
Yes. The guy that played Lurch was in that. Ted Cassidy.
Right.
Played one of the aliens, yeah.
So the spaceship landed, and they told all the humans they're going to take him to a better place, and that just, just step on our spaceship.
I think it was called To Serve Man.
To Serve Man, right,
yes,
right.
Yes.
To Serve Man. And then we find out at the very end that they're all eating the humans that they take. The humans.
Yes, the menu. To Serve Man is a cookbook.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, when it comes to things that are unknown, everyone needs to use a lot of discernment, a lot of testing, a lot of very careful looking at things. And so in my own personal experience, I had to do that for at least a couple of years, and I still do it. I still check everything out to the best of my ability, and I still always tell people, don't believe anything I say, but study this to see if it resonates. Because mm-hmm. if people, the key to this whole thing is to be able to open yourself beyond your own filtering system so that if there's something that can impact you, that you are open to letting it in and you have some discernment to decide that it's positive and that it's not negative and it has no agenda. Those are all the things a human has to do. And most humans will not bother going to any of that trouble. They will make up their minds. They think they know everything. And even when they hear things that are advanced, they start to think they're superior to other people because they know things that other people don't know. And they lose the whole thing. They lose the shtick because
mm-hmm.
they're not evolving themselves. So, in my case, and we've talked about this on the two other shows, I'm having communication with these voices, and they're explaining that they are group souls outside of this dimension, that they, being outside of this dimension in another way means they're in another timeline. It means we are in what you could call third dimensional time. And right in our space, right now, as far as I can understand it, there are parallel timelines stacked up. So everyone has parallel timelines all around them, but they can't see them because the physical equipment, sensory equipment of a human body can't see other timelines or can't sense them. So the fact that I even say that they're there, somebody has to consider this as a premise. They can't believe it because they can't validate it the first time they hear it. So I have these voices talking to me, and I'm writing a book about voices talking through someone else, and the voices are explaining that they are outside of this timeline, that they are, in fact, where essentially time stops, and there is no time. And they can move in and out of time, like you and I jump into a swimming pool. And they describe themselves as group soul energies. And I've been exposed to two main voices that have described themselves that way. And one of the voices calls himself the Elohim, and in looking up the word, Googling the word Elohim, they are the term for God in the Old Testament, and they're also another thing said the creator God of this realm, and other things said the group that was talking to Joseph Smith when he started the Mormon Church. Now, I'm having extensive conversations with this voice. And as part of the conversations, I'm being my normal skeptic self, and I'm saying, hey, how do I know my friend that's channeling you is not schizophrenic and making it up? Can you guys predict a newspaper headline? And then they tell me they can, And they predict a newspaper headline. And they're right on, and they even tell me the weekend of the headline. And then we talked about the story before, but I had the situation with my sister where she was going to die. I asked them if they could help, and they said they could. And she survived this critical cancer operation. And a few weeks later, she had to go in for tests, and the tests showed that her lupus disappeared. And the nurse said, lupus never disappears. And they tested her again and again, and her lupus was gone. So those were two things that drew my attention to the fact that whoever this voice was, there was something very real about them and what they could do. And I'm just a little earth guy, and I'm saying, how do I use this? How do I make this valuable to other people? I mean, if it's just me bringing forth a message and saying, hey, here's what the Elohim say, which I can do. I can tell you what they say. And I can tell you that they say we're in this critical period, that there's something, we're at the end of a 75,000-year cycle, and that there's going to be this division of souls when we die. Normally, we reincarnate thousands of times, and we keep coming back into what they call the third dimension, which is our dimension. And there's something different happening in this death experience, because they're saying that the earth is lifting its vibration to the heart energy, the fourth chakra, which means that if we don't have our heart energy open in the fourth chakra, then we will not be able to participate in this higher level earth vibration. And so that if you don't participate, now they're saying that those people that don't graduate and move up with the earth end up repeating this dimension, but they go to another planet. They move to another planet in another star system, which is still dedicated to third dimensional experience. And the word that attaches to third dimensional experience is power and individuality. And so that's not bad. It means that, first of all, we have to know we are unique individuals, and second of all, that we have power. And power and individuality are the lessons that people are learning in this realm. But if you don't learn it, it's kind of like you can't go on to high school, you have to repeat junior high. And that may take another few hundred thousand years on another planet. And from their point of view, time is an illusion, so it doesn't matter. What the heck? And it's like we've all gone through thousands and thousands of years, and every time we have a life, we forget everything. So it would just be a repeat of what we're already doing instead of graduating to this higher level Earth. And they say, on the cosmic plan, everybody gets there eventually. It doesn't matter how long. So no big deal. Except that in this dimension, there's a lot of suffering. And so we go through lifetimes, and sometimes you have, you know, you're lucky or you have good karma and you have a very good, empowered, pleasant life. But oftentimes lives are very difficult, fraught with pain, sorrow, sickness, disease, loss, and oppression. And once you're in this realm, sometimes it's the luck of the draw as to what happens to you. So they're explaining how that works and that what a critical time this is, and all we have to do to graduate is to have an open heart, which is now, how do you do that? Okay, he just told me that I may not graduate. Oh, my God, I'm scared. I don't want to be the one that doesn't graduate. Life is terrible. I read in the paper every day. There's food shortages. The economy is going down. Am I going to die? Is my family going? Well, we're all going to die, so you might as well face that. If I have it right, and if who I'm talking to is who they say they are, than making a connection with them. When you die, you'll have that connection. So you'll be in a much better position than not having that connection, in which case you're kind of on your own, stumbling around over and over again. So my job is to make those connections, to help people make the connections with these higher soul groups. And I've been talking about the Elohim, but I've learned that there's two of them. There's the Elohim group, and there's the Ra group. The Elohim group is composed of intelligences that were part of the original creation of the universe and never came into this realm, and stayed as energies outside of this realm to hold a positive pull to make sure, one of the interesting things they said, that this realm didn't fall into complete darkness, which if they didn't hold their side of it, is a potential, because within this realm, there are many, many dark powers that vie for control. And most of us, one of the reasons we have filters is because we have been programmed to have filters by the very forces that don't want us to figure all this out, because it frees us from this realm. And once you're freed, you can't be controlled by the dark powers. So there are forces that control everybody, and you could call them the shadow governments, the negative elite, you know, whatever. And there's stories about where all these forces come from, but it's not so important to know that. And you should know it a little bit, because this is where this, you can't get discernment down if you don't understand completely what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, goes into a lot of explanation for how it all works. And it's, you know, it goes beyond UFOs. It goes beyond what most people have ever imagined is true. Now, I know you know about the negative, what could be called the negative elite. Am I right? I don't know if you use that word for them, but...
Well, I wouldn't. They like to call themselves the elite. I have other names for them. Some you can't say on the radio.
Right. Well, you know, they tend to have the money, and they tend to have the power. And,
yes. I see all of that win as an illusion, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, they make the money out of thin air, and we readily just bow down to them as if they have some special dispensation. All they have done is made an attempt to take our freedom from us and our consciousness on many levels. So it's merely a matter of recognizing where the illusions are. And
yes.
Usually you'll see the dark side, if you want to call them that, right there. The manipulators of all those events that we chalk up for our reality, when it's really all an illusion.
You know, I would suggest one of the ways that I have learned to look at that is that knowing what they are and what they do is the first step, and then forgetting it all is the second step.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that you transcend it is not paying it any attention.
Not because giving it the energy, yeah.
Right, because that which you resist persists. You need to know a little bit about it, because they will create an illusion, and they'll fool you. They fooled people through, you know, many lifetimes. People are under their spell. So you have to break their spell and know what their tricks are. But then you can't, if you hate them, if you call them unfair, if you focus on it, you are now drawing yourself into polarizing yourself with them. And when you polarize with something, you end up being at its effect even when you're against it. A good example oftentimes is, say, you ever see that movie about the police in New York, you know, and how it was an old movie, Prince of the City, it might have been Prince of the City, or it might have been Al Pacino, Serpico,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe Serpico. You know, what happens is the very people that are supposedly protecting us from crime get caught up in their own greed, and they start taking payoffs, and they become just as bad as who they're protecting us from, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So this is an example of how when you focus on something that's negative, how easily it is to be seduced and polarized and start taking on characteristics of exactly what you want to correct. And you can't correct it by polarizing yourself with it.
Mm-hmm.
You can correct it by rising above it, by focusing on something positive. Now, that's easier said than done, because there's not a lot positive on this planet. Well, let's say it can be hard to find something positive that you can trust on this planet. So one of the things that I have been attempting to do, and just with a little bit degree of success, is to create something positive that people can look towards and that they can kick the tires and it'll withstand the scrutiny of, you know, having hidden agendas. And doing this in cooperation and co-creation with these group souls. So I learned a major thing about these group souls, and that was that they were not just a voice talking to me through someone else. They were that, but simultaneously, when they were talking to me, I would find that I could see and feel an energy in the room. And, you know, for many years I had gone to spiritual events, I've been to spiritual teachers, gurus, and I learned to notice an energy that was present around many of these people when they did their presentations. And, I mean, Christians call the energy Holy Spirit, Indians call it prana, Wilhelm Reich called it orgone energy, but there was an energy that can be perceived by somebody who's sensitive in certain kinds of gatherings. And so when we were doing these channelings and I was talking to them, I would notice that energy in the room. And as I questioned them, I found out that that was them. They could actually project into this realm from outside of time, and the way they appeared in this realm was that kind of energy. So then it became like, well, this is wild. I mean, how do I work this? Then when I would give talks, that energy would show up in the room, and other people would experience it. I didn't tell them about it the way I'm just talking about it directly, but I would just give a talk. Even when a talk was just about the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, people would go out to the room to buy the book, and my friend was selling the books, and she said people were coming up and saying they could see auras in the room, or they could see light in the room, and they didn't experience that before. So now I'm learning that these group souls had the ability to project into this realm as a kind of energy, and that other people could feel this energy, and that they could actually, they don't violate free will, so somebody has to ask, but if a person was desirous of seeking this experience, if they asked, they could actually work with someone in a very intimate personal way. And it was this very energy that was able to work with my sister on a molecular level and heal her, not only of cancer, but of lupus. And lupus had to be a miracle, because that's what the doctor said. So then it's been like an experimentation of, and this is how I talked about it for the last couple of years. This is a giant experiment because I don't know what I'm doing. And I can't know what I'm doing. I'm working with things that are beyond my mind's ability to understand. So I said, well, if I do this, will they back it up and do this? So we started doing the conference calls a couple of years ago. And I asked them, I said, well, if I do a conference call, would you work with the people on the call and be able to help them? And they said, yes, they could. And so I started doing the calls. Now, I didn't tell anybody that this was the case. I said, we're going to try this and we'll see what happens. And then people started having little miracles. Like they would ask for something and something would transform in their life. But more than miracles of phenomena, people were actually saying, hey, I feel this presence with me. I can tell they're here. I am cheerier. Something is lifted. My relationships are changing. And mm-hmm. I kept watching this go on, and, you know, and certain people got really addicted to my conference line. They just said, we want to do this more often than once a week, which is how we started it. And so it's been going on now every night of the week. And I'm only doing Monday because I don't want to just live with a telephone on my ear. So other people are moderating it. And I said, well, hey, if Wayne and Suzanne do moderate and they do this, will you work with them? And they said they would. And so different people are coming on at different times. And I've gotten the agreement of the group Soul to work with these people. Now, what I realize is what I'm doing, it has got a historical precedent. But I don't usually use this word, but I could say the precedent. It's an initiation. It's an initiation. Until someone has the experience of feeling those energies, they don't have a clue that it's even possible. So the first step is for someone to say, I feel something. I feel a tingling. I feel goosebumps. I feel a movement of energy. I feel my heart feels different. And so then they say, boom, could that be them? And so you need that experience as something to reach towards, to look for more of it. Because if, you know, so in the old days that was called initiation. Somebody who was kind of a spiritual master would then call people into his presence, invoke that energy. They didn't talk about group souls, but they would bless them, give them a mantra, and say, if they were really connected, they could actually do it. Because the group souls would be working with them, and that energy would transfer from him to whoever was being initiated, and that whoever was being initiated would now have a memory of that energy that they could keep, use as a reference point to keep going back to.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I wanted to bring up a point, you know, you heard my introduction where I was addressing the people who were sort of reacting in this mental way of challenging my statements that really, you know, I don't care to argue over whether or not I've had metaphysical experiences or I understand metaphysics or I understand things of a spiritual nature. Their issues are this mental struggle, this wrestling match that's going on inside their own head. And so I know that those people, and those were the people I was addressing my remarks to, are the ones that have to stop for a moment and just consider what they're doing, okay? At that point, I think we have an innate ability. Once we do that and we stop this tennis match, you know, that goes back and forth between the positive and the negative, the good and the bad, the hot and the cold, And we kind of look at the middle and focus on the middle. I mean, where is your heart? Isn't it in the middle of your body? You know, mm-hmm. you focus on the middle path, and then the heart sort of opens up. But you have mm-hmm. to have integrity, and you have to have intention, and you have to choose. You have to make that choice that that's the path you want to follow. That's where I feel that process begins. With any spiritual progress that you would make in terms of uplifting one's consciousness, it mm-hmm. it takes place in the heart, and you have to quiet the mind. You have to stop that struggle that's going on, which mm-hmm. is why we don't solve our problems by reapplying another version of the same problem on it. You know, it would be like scraping your cut knee with a wire brush because, you know, that seems to cause something to happen. And it's mm-hmm. not, it's not at all what you need to heal, you know, your scraped knee.
You can't open your heart to your mind.
Yes, that's
your
right.
Your mind is something different than your heart.
Absolutely.
Now, you know what? The way you open your heart is by learning how to be neutral and say, I'm open, okay? And oftentimes for many people, when they start doing that, this wave of fear and panic comes over them.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're open, you've now started to surface all your old patterns, all your old traumas, things that are stuck in you. And most people, this is why it's so important to have a support system. It's so important to have other people that understand what's happening. Because most people will not go through that. They'll run away from it because it's scary and it's too painful. And, you know, Christians, the Christian term is called going through the dark night of the soul. And no one will go through that unless they have faith that it's the, faith is the word, because you have to know that that's, if you know that's part of the process. In other words, in health, oftentimes people talk about healing crises, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where things get worse before they get better. So when I give you this supplement to take, you may be sick for a couple of days. It may give you a stomachache, but after that, you're going to be better. It's a common thing in alternative health to talk about healing crisis. But it's mm-hmm. also it's not so common to understand this as part of your growth as a spiritual being requires a very similar kind of healing crisis, where we have all spent many, many lifetimes. We've all been jerks. We've all, I won't say all, but most of us have done horrible things. You know, most of us have been hurt immensely. Most of us have hurt other people immensely. And when you start to say, okay, I'm open, I want to open myself up, the first thing that happens is all this other garbage starts rushing in. And you're now going through the pain of all the transgressions of all your past lives. And, of course, you don't, if someone doesn't explain this to you, you're not going to know that. You're going to think it's your pain. I mean, you're not going to understand the process, and you're going to run away from it. And not with, you know, I wouldn't chastise a person for doing that. Because if they don't understand the process,
mm-hmm.
you know, then how do they know it's good?
Yeah, one of the things you're leading up to here, I mean, you've said it and gone beyond it, but it might bear pointing out that at that moment where all that fear and all those feelings come rushing up to a conscious level, really, what one is seeing is the false self. They're seeing the illusory self or the ego. And that's the ego's defense mechanism to struggle to hold on to this system into which it's been indoctrinated, this control.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this lower or base consciousness.
But it's still painful. And
yes, yes.
And people do not want to go through it. And I don't blame them. Everyone wants a quick fix, a panacea. give me this pill and make me enlightened. You know, give me a new idea. Give me the right spiritual teacher to follow. Give me the right religion to join. Let's organize. One of the things that I've learned is that the concept of group energy, and that the universe is a huge conglomerate of groupings of energies. Not just, there's no such thing as a single energy that's totally, how can I say it, separated. Everything mm-hmm. has got some degree of connection to other energies. And that as you get into these group souls, the way they explain it is they operate as a group, and they have sub-councils as groups, and that they are totally psychic with each other, and they can choose to be operating as a total group, or they can choose to be more individuated. And they do it based on the need, on the lower levels, the needs of our planet, because they can zap our planet with really positive energy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe if there's enough people open to those energies, or there's a group of a meeting, they have hundreds or thousands of them grouped together flowing into this realm. And at other times, they're operating more independently. Let's say somebody just needs a little support and help. They might send a few to say, we'll work around somebody and be helpers and energetic boosts for that person, which is sometimes what we call angelic support. So it's all one big constant changing of everything. Now, even humans do that too. I mean, if you're in a marriage and you have a close relationship with a woman, there are times, if it's a real relationship, then that relationship will be, at certain times, totally tight. You will be really connected with that person, and you'll be intuitive with them, and you'll feel them, their energy inside you, and they'll feel your energy inside them, and you can almost be like a team, or like musicians who are really tight. And you're a musician, right, Don? So mm-hmm. you know this, you know.
Like to think I know. Am, anyway.
Well, you know, they get psychic with each other. It's yeah. like when they're jamming, they can anticipate the riffs, and you know you hear really good jazz musicians, and you know it's you know they're psychic. You know that they're tuned in beyond time, because of the way they synchronize themselves.
Of course, there's even a multi-level communication going on there, multi-dimensional.
Right. You know. So this idea of group energy is not something totally woo-woo outside of this realm. Everyone's experienced it to some degree or another. And it is the experience of group energy that is probably what brings us our greatest joy in this realm. Like, what is the most profound experience of group energy is probably when a man and woman are intimate, or two people are intimate. There's a great joy that's produced because they have become one in their energies, if they're doing it at a high level. Musicians, when you look at musicians and the way they cue each other and the way they smile at each other, there can be a great joy presence in the sharing between two musicians. Well, it gives us an inkling of what it's like to be part of a group soul, that they have that same experience. Now, the thing that I've learned is that when we are having that experience, it's far easier for them to join with us. And this answers some really big questions that I wouldn't have understood until I understood what I'm sharing with you. It's like when two people create a group energy, their energy becomes multidimensional. It penetrates through timelines. So even though their bodies are in this timeline, their energies are penetrating through timelines, and they become more visible to the higher forces. Because if a human is in this realm and is very contracted, as most humans can be, then their energy becomes kind of invisible to the higher realms.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they can think they're praying, but it's hard for them to get prayers answered because they have to get their energy penetrating through the dimensions so they're noticed. That's why a group of people praying together creates a group energy that can then be seen by these group souls, which is why churches probably started originally, to get a group of people together that would be gathered for a higher purpose, which, if the intent is high enough, creates a group energy. Similar to the energy that people have experienced when they go to a musical event. And they experience, you know, if two musicians are creating a group energy, you know, that group energy that they're creating becomes psychically imparted to everyone in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is sharing it. What is the result? Joy. But of course, in that context, they're not realizing that, hey, we can invite these group souls to join us, and we can ask for their help, and we can ask for their healings. People don't realize they have the opportunity to do it, but they don't even realize that they can, because it's never even been presented to them before that it's possible. So the idea in the highest sense of a church service or a spiritual gathering is for those present to invoke a group energy, which then automatically becomes a lightning or a lighthouse that can be visible through dimensions, that then can allow the group souls to penetrate and pay attention, and then allows us to ask them for help in various aspects down here, because they say over and over again, they don't violate free will. So unless we ask for their help, they have to stay back. Now they tell me they can stop nuclear weapons from going off, they can stop or diminish earthquakes, but they can't just do it. They need us to be the energetic connections, so that they co-create with us. We have to ask, we have to be a participant energetically to create the connection that causes them to do interventions. Now, of course, they are doing interventions, and there are lots of people asking. And they don't care if it's a conventional church and people say God, as long as the group energy is present, and the intent is high, then they can work with that. They work with many, many circumstances. It's just that I may be getting the most explicit understanding of how this interaction works. And so it's one of the reasons my conference calls are so important. You know, I do one every Monday on BBS, and then I do them on the phone all through the week. And the people on the conference calls are feeling the energies of these group souls in their space. And we're creating a group energy, even though we're not in the same room, where we can do it on the call. We can merge our energies on these calls and create a group energy that goes all over the United States. We can invite these group souls into our group energy. And then we can say, we need help here. Could we have help there? I'd like to ask for my Aunt Jerry's healing for this. And they can hear that. And when it's appropriate, they can do interventions. So
see, now, when what you're describing is for someone listening to what you're saying and someone who comes to this show, you know, they tune in BBS radio, they adjust their volume and they're sitting back and they're listening to what you're saying and they're considering this or they're weighing what you're saying against, I say against, or comparing it to their religious upbringing or mm-hmm. their religious beliefs as they have possibly been taught and maybe not discerned on their own. In other words, they're following a protocol of doctrine. What do you suggest they do to, and I know the answer to this, but I'm interested in what you have to say or what they say, about how one, transcends that. Because if you're in a belief system, there is a difference between knowing and believing. I'm sure you would agree.
Mm-hmm.
And that faith is a type of trust. It's an unending trust, really. If you have faith, at what point do you end it? If you're seeking to go higher and you have faith that you're going to reach a higher plateau in your consciousness, you are going to continually exercise faith, and it'll be part of you. It'll be your modus operandi, so to speak. But for the person that is going to struggle with the doctrine that they've been maybe spoon-fed since mm-hmm. A young age, what do they suggest one does?
Well, first of all, there's many religious organizations that even where the doctrine may not hold up completely, I mean, obviously, the doctrines of all the religions can't be all correct because they're all different.
Mm-hmm.
And they have similarities, but there's differences. And so if you are trying to create an absoluteness about things, you might be thinking, well, my religion is better than all the others. And they don't have it, and I have it. And, but you don't even know why yours is right, because you've accepted it on faith. So, I mean, I would suggest that within the doctrine, there can be many, many things that work, many rituals, like, and whether it works or not depends upon the person who is guiding it, your minister. Regardless of religion, each church has its own minister, its own preacher, its own bishop. You are going to be influenced by the intent of that person. Their intent is going to be able to create a group energy or put you to sleep while they're talking. And some people believe that it's okay to sit in a room and hear a talk and even be bored, because on some level they think God must be loving them just because they're in that room. But they're not participating in group energy. For any of this to work, there has to be the creation of group energy. When two or more are gathered, I am also present. There has to be a high enough intent for the energy to penetrate the veil.
Now, some of these organizations have a pattern of control that only the person at the top, let's say the minister, the head pastor, whatever you want to call that person, whatever title he gives himself or the group gives him, the doctrine many times states that that person is the only means through which they can get to whoever it is they're worshiping, be it Jesus or you understand what I'm saying. This is how cults form, where they begin worshiping the front man for the organization and lose focus on the bigger picture.
Right. Now this is a tricky thing, because I'm suggesting that the person with the highest intent can move other people into an experience.
Mm-hmm.
But once you move into your own experience and you learn that your intent can also invoke that experience. If they don't want that to happen, if they just want your energy always focused on them, you might consider that you can still do it, but don't take it seriously. Learn that you can invoke those same energies, and it's through your intent.
Yeah.
And, you know, most people do not know how to use their intent. In other words, you know, they could say a prayer, for example, but they think that saying the words in their mind is enough. But that's not intent. You need intent. You know, one of the things that I've been doing on BBS Radio and experimenting on is learning to use my own intent to create the people that are listening to have some kind of experience. And I say this is an example of something that you can do also, but you need to raise your intent to the point where you are able to penetrate the veil.
Yes, I agree. Now there
and you'll know you do it because you did it. You'll feel it. People around you will feel it. Some people won't do it because they don't want to look stupid around other people. Or they think, what are people going to think of me? So, therefore, you have to keep giving up your power to the person. Hopefully, the person who is doing this does have a high enough intent to create the energy. Because oftentimes, they don't even have a high enough intent, but they've created fear that if you don't pay attention to them or pay their bills, that you are going to be lost because you need them. So they're creating kind of a codependency rather than teaching a high intent.
Yes.
But the thing about it is that we haven't gone into my story, and I want to suggest that if those who are listening, if they're interested, they should read. I send out my free ebook, Questions and Answers with the Elohim. Just drop me an email, winfree@yahoo.com, and I'll send it to you. I hope this is going to be my next published book. It tells the story of what happened to me, the miracles that happened, my own research, my cross-referencing to prove that it was real, and then it brings forth half of it is the messages of, like, the Elohim explaining what's happening on our planet, how they operate with us, what happens when you die, what this particular period of time means that we're going through right now, and how to make connection with them. That's the most important thing, how to make connection with them. And the thing about it is when you read their words, reading their words actually makes, for many people, makes the connection, because their frequency is embedded in their words. So please take me up on this offer and see if you have your own experience, because it's kind of like you can read the words and sometimes they just, your consciousness starts dancing while you're reading it, because they will make an attempt, if you're open, if it won't scare you, they will make an attempt to connect with your consciousness while you're reading the words. And the other group soul, the Ra group, will do the same thing. And they are probably brought forth best in the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. So the fact that these two group souls are actually communicating verbally in present time, and that their energy is attached to their communications, is a very amazing thing. And it's something that if anyone even considers the possibility that I might be right, that they should read this material and get their own experience to see if they notice this. And that's a very important experience for someone to have, to feel the energy of these group souls. They're not just to be thinking about it in their minds or trying to understand it mentally, but to realize that they can come into this realm as love, what they call love light energy.
Mm-hmm. When the chapter that you call connecting with the Elohim and
yes.
extricating oneself from the dark side is
yes.
actually very timely for the experiences that we're having on the planet right now. And,
right.
and for just for the information that's in there, when I read that and it was interesting for me to read their representation of how the dark side developed and what their methods are and how one
mm-hmm.
gets sucked into it and how one can extricate oneself from it. And I recognized
mm-hmm.
all the things they were saying, although the manner in which I experienced that understanding and it became a part of my consciousness was both through experience, we could say some of the victimization experience, as well as stepping out and revealing it for what it is, you see. So I sort of serve a twofold purpose in that respect. Yet I agree with what is written there, what they say. I agree with that because it's very easy to see how that has played out in my life and in the lives of others that I know.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if they, and I'm saying the dark side, you wonder to what extent they are actually conscious of what they are doing, or are they just so enthralled in it that they see nothing else but an unquenchable thirst to act out that energy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it depends on how high you go up the dark side's ladder. You know, the dark side has a ladder.
Is it up or down?
Well, it is up. It is up. It's expansive. It's expansive. You know, the difference between the two is that the positive sources never violate free will.
Mm-hmm.
And the dark forces do. So that's where you have to be careful.
Yeah. Well, I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
I
don't want to talk about him anymore. We're going to cut it because Daphne is in the background. And when I start talking about him, she starts feeling them. Yeah.
Oh, well, so, it is in your book.
It's in the book and read it. But let's call in the light. Let's call in the light and let's bring in the light side because some of you will experience this. Is that okay if I do that, Don?
Yes. In our waning moments, yes, you may
do that.
In
our waning moments, a good way to finish.
Okay.
It's like I'm going to create an invocation with my own positive intent that when I do this, many people or some people can experience the energy shift in their physical space. And I'm going to give you the postulate that this energy shift in your physical space can actually be these group souls coming in to visit you. Now, they won't do this if you're afraid, if you don't allow it. So if you've listened to the show and it sounds like maybe I'm onto something and you're open, then be open. And if you feel like you need to know more, then go read my books. Or if you feel this is not for you, then go to another channel right now. But for those that are open, this is an experience that you can feel. Now, I do this using my understanding of the cosmos. But a conventional religious minister can do the same thing and bring the energies in without this complete understanding, but through their high intention. So it is, again, I say it's intention, and it's intention to bring in the positive, not just to have a phenomena, but to be committed to the positive. So with that, let me just do this. Father, Mother, God, we ask just now for the presence of the light to surround and protect Don Nikoloff, myself, and everybody that's listening right now on BBS Radio. Now, each of you that's listening exists in other realms as well as your physical body. You are each a multidimensional being and existing in other timelines. And the other timelines are outside of this time and this space. And by our own intention, we can blend our energies for a brief moment in those other timelines. Even though we're all in separate physical areas, we can bring our energies together because this is beyond space. So no matter where we are, anywhere in the world, for a moment, we can experience oneness. And in this experience of creating this group energy, we can invite the energy of those group souls, the Elohim group and the Ra group, into our group energy. And now we've expanded our group energy to billions of individual sources that are flooding our consciousnesses. And some of you are noticing a shift in your space. You're noticing a lightness. You're noticing an intensity. And you're being paid attention to. And at this moment now, while you're connected to this energy, you can put something into the light. And we have a huge conglomerate group energy working with what you're putting into the light. So, for example, maybe someone you know is sick, is having challenges. Think of them and picture them in your mind's eye, in their purity and in their love, and share this energy with them. Send it to them. Surround them with it. And ask that anything that can be alleviated might be done so for the highest good of all concerned. Some of you might have your own issues. Send this energy to yourself and to your own issues. Send this energy to someone who has hurt you, that you're angry with, that you're having trouble forgiving. See them and their need to be cared for and loved by these higher forces. And send this energy to them for their highest good. Ask for the healing of the conflict and the hurt that has been created between you and them. And finally, let's send this energy to our entire planet. Let it circle the planet and find areas of darkness and fill it in. Let's ask for interventions for the highest good of all concerned, interventions from these higher forces that are able to do amazing things down here. Ask them that they might do these interventions, and you're casting your vote for them, for the principle of peace. And on that note, let's come back down, bring the energies back to our bodies, come back down to individuating yourself, close yourself off, keep yourself protected from anything negative, contain yourself with back in your own hologram. And thank you for allowing me for sharing this with you. Keep the Christ light in your heart. And when you're walking around and you're meeting people, just reinvoke this light and send it to everyone you meet. Send it in front of you so that your days are passed in uplifting this realm. No matter what anyone else is going through, you can hold this energy of peace and love and interdimensional anchoring from these higher forces. And on that
note, thank you, Don.
I hope everyone comes to my Monday night call. We do more of that on that call, Monday night at 6 p.m. Or request my questions and answers with the Elohim, winfrey@yahoo.com. Or wants to read about all my conference calls, please go to higher-vision.org. Or if you want to learn more about the Ra Group Soul, read The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, available on Amazon and better bookstores everywhere.
Now, I'm hearing you in an echo as if you're standing in the mountains in Switzerland.
Did our communication change?
It changed drastically. Okay, now the echo stopped. That just might have been Seth and Don playing a game with us. Who knows?
That was probably Seth and Don, okay? You never know, though. So weird things happen when I do that, you know? Believe me.
You sounded, all you had to do was say Ricola, and it would have been perfect. You mentioned Daphne is there. Please give her our best, and also Terry. And
wait a second. Here, I'll put you on the speaker.
Hello, Daphne. How are you?
Okay, you're on the speakerphone.
Can you hear us, Daphne? Okay, she's not coming through for some reason. She might be too far from the phone.
She's here, almost closer. There you go.
Hello, Daphne. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. And how are the Elohim tonight?
I think they're always in a state of perpetual good.
Okay, that's good to hear.
they're more concerned about humanity and humanity being stupid.
Yes. Well, that's what the show was about tonight. So, you know, we want to thank you for all the work that you contribute to WIND's mission to bring this message forward, because we know that without you, WIND would have to do all the work himself, wouldn't he? Well, I told Wynn that we have to have you on the show sometime, so maybe the next time he's on, we'll do that.
Okay, thank you, appreciate that.
Well,
okay.
Next time let me just say, Terry has been really, really important. It's of two people in my life who were able to channel these messages to make it real. And they both have been made contributions and sacrifices beyond anything you could understand, okay?
Yes.
But Daphne will be happy to complain if you ask her. Nonetheless, it's not an easy job bringing this thing forth. And, you know, but Terry and Daphne both have been amazing. In fact, it would be very interesting sometime, if Terry wants to go along with it, to do a show with both of them on the air and chatting about the experiences they all had when the Elohim kept channeling through them to talk to me.
Well, maybe we can do that the next time we have you on. How would that be?
That would be great. In fact, if anyone does a YouTube... I can't give the URL out on this, but there's actually an hour channeling. Did I send you that, the channeling that Daphne did on YouTube?
No, you didn't.
You know what? I'll send it to you. If you want to post it on one of your pages.
Okay.
That's the URLs. But if you just do a search on Daphne, Welcome to the Vortex. Daphne, Welcome to the Vortex on YouTube. We were on a show in West Hollywood, on a public access show, where they actually did a public channeling, which this is really rare, okay? A public channel, Daphne, and it's an hour long, and actually at the very beginning, Daphne plays some harp. She's a great harpist.
Oh, wow. So, didn't know that.
She's a great musician. In fact, the reason we got together originally was because I'm a musician and she's a musician. And I said, oh, my God, I have someone that I can play music with. She says it was the poems that did it. But in any case, look up Daphne, Welcome to the Vortex on YouTube.
Okay.
Six 10-minute channelings up there that... It's part 2-1, part 2-2, part 2-3. They'll come up, and they're really amazing.
Well, now I know who I can get to do some harp music on some of my recordings.
There you go.
As long as she doesn't charge triple scale.
It's not concert harp. She's like a jazz harpist.
No, no.
That's fine.
Modulate.
She's not good at modulating. Well,
I can play my music in any key, even the key of metaphysical distress. So I'm sure we'll find a key for the instrument.
Right.
Okay. Well, Wynn, thank you for being on the show. We're out of time. Actually, we ran over quite a bit, as you may have guessed.
I didn't talk too much.
Well, no, actually, it's a good message, and it needs to be heard. So, we gave you the platform. We want to thank Seth Hendricks and Don Newsom for allowing us to go over here and for making this show possible. And we enjoyed the special effects there at the end of the invocation. That was a trip. Hendrick. He's correcting me. Seth Hendrick. I may have slipped and put an S on the end. Now he's sending me icons with the tongue sticking out. Okay, but we'll have you on again soon, Wynn, and we'll have the girls on, and maybe we can even get Daphne to play some harp music. Wouldn't that be nice?
You mean while we're on the air?
Yeah, well, of course. Why not?
I could get a good miking system, but I'll send you some of her pieces. You know, I'll send you a link.
Send me some music, and then I'll play them on the air. How's that?
It's great. You know, believe it or not, about 7 years ago, Daphne and David Wilcock, who is the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, did something together. 2003.
Oh, wow.
So they made an album with 7 songs, so I'll send you some of the songs. And David was playing drums and made a flute. And Daphne also plays flute. And some people have listened to it and said it's the most relaxing, peaceful thing they ever heard. So.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing that then. And I'll send you my address so you can send me the book, and we'll exchange all this stuff here.
All right. Thank you, Don, for letting us to go over.
Okay.
And thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks for having me on tonight, Don.
Okay. And we'll have you on again soon. We'll book a date soon here, Wynn. Thank you so much. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest this evening was Wynn Free. In fact, he still is Wynn Free. He'll be on a future show, and the next time we'll have Daphne and Terry on board, and they'll describe some of the events that occurred. Well, all of this wonderful information was coming to win, to document in his book, Questions and Answers with the Elohim. You can download that for free at his website, as he mentioned earlier. And we will be back here tomorrow with another show. My special guest will be Jim Murray, my weekly guest, scientist, author, inventor, lecturer, and teacher, and talk show guest, I guess. So in the meantime, I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. My name is Don Nikoloff, and I wish you a very peaceful, light-filled, love-filled good night.